you know that 38% of agencies struggle with frequently over-servicing clients? Of the 500-plus agencies surveyed for the 2023 State of Agency Operations Report, 44% also said that client demands have become tougher to meet. Are you finding clients more demanding and over-servicing happening more frequently in your agency? If so, 2024 can be different on both those fronts. Ken Yarmish, business coach, fractional COO, and founder of The Remote Solopreneur, recently joined me on our Agency Life webinar series, and he laid out a clear path forward so that agency leaders like you can help your team stop over-servicing clients for good. In today's episode, you'll learn the root causes of consistently over-servicing clients, how to stop selling widgets and start selling outcomes, as Ken puts it, the 5 steps to scale up your agency's offers, and why you need to flip the communication pyramid with clients to deliver client work without the typical headaches. To kick things off, we'll let you hear from Ken on his background and history working in and founding agencies himself, just so you can feel confident that his advice can actually help your agency stop over-servicing clients in 2024.
I've been an agency guy my whole career, which I will not date myself. I have a little bit of a baby face, but the kids, you know, have aged me a bit more now. So I've been involved in probably about 10 plus agencies. It's either a founder of the agency or, you know, building it from the ground up. And my last agency, I grew it to a pretty decent scale and then merged it in, became one of 3 partners at a much larger firm where we eventually went through a fairly large exit. And as opposed to not seeing my kids grow up, I decided to take all those lessons learned, cash out of my position, and try to help the Kens behind me, so to speak, not saying that I'm, you know, reached a height that other people haven't, and just show them a better way of how to grow without constantly being tied to the agency life where it's that grinding, get more clients, hire more people. I call it the hungry dragon, right? Like where we just kind of get in this vicious cycle. So yeah, excited to chat about this more. It's near and dear to my heart, as you know, Logan. So I'll let you drive us forward here.
Yeah, absolutely. For folks who don't know Ken, he's a great guy. We got to know each other actually as a client of the agency he mentioned that I was a part of. And he and I often joke that, you know, whether you're an agency owner and looking at folks who have these courses and have these ideas on how you should scale your agency or how you can build that business, right? And kind of the fake influencers that have never done it. Ken's modest in talking about kind of blazing through some of those accomplishments. He's actually done it. He's scaled. He's had successful exits and mergers. And so we're going to be talking about some of his lessons learned from that so you can learn from someone who's actually done it. Quick roadmap. We're going to be kind of showing you that if over-servicing kind of hits a chord, strikes a chord with you right now, you're not alone. This is the third in a series we're doing here on the Agency Life webinar series, extracting some insights from our State of Agency Operations report. If you haven't read that, we'll have a link to that towards the end of the deck as well. But suffice it to say that as we surveyed hundreds and hundreds of agencies, it's a common industry-wide problem. What we don't want to do is just think that over-servicing means that you're not handling conversations when scope creep happens with your clients. It is a problem that stems much before that. So one of Ken's big mantras is identifying and honing your 3 core systems, marketing, sales, and delivery. One of your common mantras, selling outcomes versus selling widgets. What does that mean? How do you do it? And how does that keep you from over-servicing? Doubling down on your lighthouse clients. And then as we progress, optimizing client delivery, this concept that I've seen before and is just a mind blower if you've been in agency life for any amount of time, flipping the communication pyramid and what that does for optimizing your sanity and client delivery. Again, as you have questions as we go here, use that Q&A box. So without further ado, let's jump in. As I mentioned, the stats from our State of Agency Operations report tell us that if you're feeling this pain of over-servicing, you're not alone. Nearly 40% of agencies self-reported that they over-service clients. 44% say it's getting harder to meet client expectations. The other thing that was interesting here, Ken and I were talking about this before we hopped on, is why are agencies in this community that we surveyed saying that they over-service clients? You can see by far and away, it's to keep clients happy, right? Especially when times are tough. But what's interesting here is you look a little bit further down, poorly defined scopes of work, inaccurate scopes of work, combined for 50% of the respondents there. So that shows to me that this doesn't just start and end in delivery. It goes further back upstream than that. Ken, as we look at some of these stats, what stands out to you as we get into the conversation today, my friend?
Yeah, I know we're going to dive into this as we go through the session, but that's exactly why when we were kind of prepping, right, we had some discussion on how could we help the folks that were coming out here. And we kind of immediately get into the like delivery mode, right? Like we've signed the deal, we've got a client that's going with us, and then all of a sudden we get that nasty gram and we're like, oh man, we have to go fix yet another nightmare, right? I mean, I think all of us, we can't, you know, I can't see the group here, but I imagine that some people are like, yeah, I'm going through that today, Ken, or I went through that yesterday, you know, I'm getting these nasty grams. And so a lot of the problems, not that we won't try to solve the issue that actually is happening, but a lot of the problems begin with our first conversations with our prospects. And especially if you get, you know, a lead that is exciting or it's a big brand, you know, I had clients like Toyota, Levi's, right? All these names that a lot of agency owners are like, oh, I wish I can have those clients. But sometimes when we get that lead in, it could be a revenue, it could be a brand name, we immediately get into this mode of like, how do I just sign the deal? Or how do I get them onto my roster? Versus going through an alignment, really what I say is from marketing, sales to delivery. And that's why I said, hey, let's make sure that we don't just jump into the systems. Like I was the CEO of my company and I'm, you know, now I help people from a COO, fractional COO standpoint, but it's not always about just the systems there. It's also about who gets into the pipeline, how we nurture them through the close, and then eventually ensuring that we can replicate that time and time again and get away from fixing the problem later on. So hopefully the first part of this conversation will be more about getting it set up right to avoid those. Then obviously we can problem solve and some of the like, well, I'm actually in that now. What do I do?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you were spot on, Ken, even though we can't see faces. Love the chat from Sam and Laurel already 45 minutes ago, 5 minutes ago, some of the responses on when they've seen those nasty grams from clients. And you're spot on. It's about what clients are coming into the pipeline, which ones are closing, and are we optimizing what we're going to deliver to those types of clients that can actually help us prevent the over-servicing before it starts. So we've got well over 100 people here today. So we want to hear from you guys. We're going to launch the poll that should be live now. And we're going to ask a similar question. How often does your agency over-service clients, similar to the question we asked in our State of Agency Operations report? Already a couple dozen responses. Looks like most of the time is winning already. Thank you guys. Keep adding to that. We'll circle back to that in the results here in just a little bit. So as we alluded to already, Ken, you're master on the mic yourself, already leading into this segue that we've got to fix marketing and sales first. We've got to prevent the mess before we have one. And as we alluded to earlier, it's really about looking at and clearly defining the three systems, whether you're a solopreneur or you're an agency of 100, this framework works. So talk to us a little bit about why this has become, you know, a repeatable framework in the work that you do with other agencies, Ken, in talking about these three specific systems.
Yeah, I try to simplify things as much as possible. Now, I realize just so people sitting there, and I had, just for context sake, like we got into, you know, close to 500 people at the end of the agency that I was last part of, and we grew very, very fast. So I understand there's other things here. Like I understand we have to talk about HR and culture and all, you know, so I don't want to like discount those, especially if someone's sitting there like, oh, great. Yeah, three systems, sure. But when it really comes down to it, and we think about, we have to attract clients, like we'll talk about Lighthouse clients. We have to close those clients and then we have to do the work. Mm-hmm. There's lots of other components and things that happen behind the agency. And again, I understand those elements, but really what I see happen a lot of times is that we don't have these three different parts of the company aligned. In my own experience, again, now I'm helping all sorts of, you know, solopreneurs, consultants, agency owners do this stuff. They're usually good at one of these. And arguably, it's not even a system, right? A system is something that you can repeat results on. But the idea of having these three pieces aligned mean that we can get to a spot where we don't always have to hire more people to grow. And we don't always have to just get that next big client. You know, for me at some point, and just so people understand a little bit more about what I did, I ran a software agency. A lot of people that I help today are marketing, sales, content agencies. I still help software as well, but they are highly customized applications, right? I built one of the first app agencies. We built really big apps. And so when I think about this, if I could do it in a highly customized environment, which was applications, how much easier is it for us if we're not in that kind of industry? You know, it could be accounting, again, all these other professional service areas. So when we have just a great lead flow, but we don't have a repeatable way to close that deal, or we are getting ghosted, or we're always losing because of price or something else, or eventually we have all that work, but then we're drowning and we're feeling like we can't hire enough, it's a vicious cycle. So we have to have all these three different systems aligned, these three parts of the business aligned, in order to not feel like we're drowning, or in order to prevent those over-servicing or those nasty grams we talked about. So we'll get into it more, Logan, but I don't, again, want to make sure that we're kind of keeping everyone tracking along.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about, on the marketing side, it really does start with who you're targeting, right? And you've right. thrown out this term before, lighthouse client. For folks who haven't heard that term from you before, define it for us and tell us a little bit about why it's so important as it relates to, you know, fixing the marketing, sales, and then the delivery to avoid overservice.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. I obviously didn't create the term ideal client profile or ICP, but I definitely have built off of that concept, and I'm trying to move away from it a little bit because I think sometimes it's superficial. I think sometimes it doesn't go deep enough and it's just been thrown around a lot where we really don't get into like, okay, if we're going to think about targeting a particular kind of client, I don't mean we're just doing outbound, you know, outreach to grow, which some people do. I have, you know, agencies that are outbound agencies. But a lot of times what happens here is that we are more reactive to the leads that are coming into us. And what a lot of people don't realize, especially if you've been doing this for a little bit, and I don't know the background of folks, but I imagine that a lot of folks here have been running their agency here for a bit. And so the leads that we have, this is something that you should really hear. The leads that we have are often a lagging indicator of positioning that we've had out in the market for some period of time, right? So if we are getting a certain lead today, it's because of a decision we made a year ago or 2 years ago, and what the market began to know who, what we do, or what, I mean, the kind of work that we aspire to have.
What your agency is known for, right?
Right. So if we want to begin to have a more scalable model where we're not over-servicing, one of the easiest ways to do that is to align, like I said, against those three systems for a similar kind of client. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know you actually, to give you credit, you know, Logan, you're super gracious on social. You're always tagging people. And I know you talk, or you're often in the comments of, I think it's like the Databox CEO who talks about this idea of being very, very focused in the kind of agency work you do. Like the best agencies maybe are, I even have clients that are like accounting, you know, they help accounting firms, but they're an operations-based agency and they've gotten that specific. Now they have a very clear, repeatable process so that they get out of this mode of like every time having to do a custom sales process, a custom proposal, a custom project. And all of a sudden we have seven different kinds of projects that we do for seven different kinds of clients.
Yeah.
So I want to really hone in on what I call the premium lighthouse client and target higher. It could be changing our positioning. We talk about getting into positioning to attract them to ultimately pay us more for our expertise versus all the widgets and the things that we create.
Yeah. And the way I think about it, I'll kind of recap some of the things you just shared and what I've heard from you in the past, Ken, and tell me if I'm understanding it right for the group here is, you know, we have ICP, we have our ideal client profile, and that's good, but sometimes it's, to your point, superficial. A lighthouse client kind of builds on top of that. It goes even narrower, and that might be narrower within the industry, might be narrower within, okay, what growth stage do we work with? What, you know, what employee size, what revenue? Let's get that narrower. But it also includes some of the psychographic stuff about the types of clients that you want to work with. What do they value? What sort of outcomes are they typically looking for? And so it's kind of like ICP, good, lighthouse client, even better. And then premium lighthouse client are the people who fit that and they're willing to pay a premium. And so that's where, do you often say that, you know, for folks that you probably have that premium lighthouse client, but you need to identify kind of one and then determine kind of lookalike from there?
Yeah. So, and thanks for bringing that up. There's definitely two other parts that I want to hone in on with this. So we'll just talk about like the title revenue, right? If you're going to say we actually have a disciplined way to do this. And by the way, there's a lot of agencies that don't. They don't do this part, especially if you're more operations or you're more, maybe you're even decent at like the delivery part, but you just haven't spent the time to think through the kind of client that you want to get. You know, you're always reactive to the leads. You have some good referrals. Referrals could often be some of the worst clients, honestly, especially going back to my point before about leads being a lagging indicator. If you haven't educated your referral network on the kind of client that you want, again, the lighthouse client, you could be getting sent some really bad leads. So the key thing here is like going beyond just title, revenue, company size, headcount, and looking things at like the psyche of that client that's buying, the firmographics, the technographics, and the exographics, which is not a term I created. That's how the company wants to be perceived in the marketplace. So a good example of this over the last year or two would be, you know, and I know this thing was a thing for you in the past, Logan, we want to be a remote first company, right? That's becoming obviously more prevalent today than it was a few years ago. But that's how we want to be perceived in the market. So I might be able to target or think through some of the challenges as it relates to that company that wants to hire that talent. So I could be looking at triggers for them hiring remote talent. And that might be a reason why I engage them. But here's a real simple way to talk about this, independent of all that. When I rebooted and said, what's Ken going to do when he grows up? You know, I'm a middle-aged man, just for reference, right? So if just going to put it out there. I put it in my social post. I started thinking about the people I work with in the past. Even though they were asking me to build software, I also helped them with operations, sales, marketing. And I thought about, how do I replicate these five clients that I had? My best clients of all time. How could I replicate them in my new business? So yes, in some ways, if you've heard a term and you're in advertising, a lookalike audience for advertising, retargeting, all that kind of stuff. Now we're talking about it for your clients and saying like, I like them because I felt like they were a peer. Who wants to educate clients? I don't, right? I don't want to spend a lot of education, one-on-one stuff with them. Here's what an app submission meant, right? Or if you're in marketing, maybe you don't even want to talk about personas. Like, oh, great, we have to talk about personas again. I'd rather go find someone who understands those, who's even maybe worked with an agency or an outside resource in the past, failed with them, and now they can see the clear difference with me. So that's what I really mean when I say to replicate the best client of all time. So I'll stop again there, but I think there was two important things that you brought up. So I'm glad you kind of doubled back on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think from here, let's talk about the differentiated positioning. Because I think one of the things that comes in here that you see a lot of agencies and solopreneurs get wrong is they position themselves as delivering these widgets. And they even set up their pricing based on that, right? You're going to get X number of blog posts, you're going to get X number of webinars, you're going to get this list. And it becomes this kind of where over you're setting yourself up for over-servicing because you're positioning yourself as a deliverer of deliverables. That could be said better, but everybody on the call knows who I'm talking about. versus someone who delivers the outcome. So talk to us about that, and then we'll continue through this list of five.
Sure, yeah. So I try to actually make these concise, and I talk about it as the more of model, okay? So if I'm a content or a marketing agency, I'm always getting paid when I do more of those things. It could be more blog posts like you talked about. It could be if you're doing ghostwriting, more articles. If you're a PR person, it could be getting more placements. But it's always, I pay you more when you do more things. As a software, just again, bringing it back in, I know I don't have all the details of the kinds of agencies we have here. But again, if I'm in software and I'm saying like, I push more code and I have more bodies on it, I get paid more. Well, I want to try to tie in, and this is why I start with the lighthouse client. When you target the lighthouse client, which obviously can include the industry and the vertical, we can begin to think about what are those pain points, those challenges, and those transformations and outcomes, and we can tie the positioning into that, right? So the difference might be like, I'm a ghostwriter, I'll bill you for how many channels or posts that I manage, versus maybe I turn insurance agencies into thought leaders and build their brand authority. And I know that no one would sit there and say, I like a LinkedIn headline or tagline that way, but they actually, as soon as they begin talking about things, they begin talking about the things that they do. So really trying to tie into that differentiated, I talk about this concept of like the Blue Ocean Service, which comes from Blue Ocean Strategy. So I give those guys a lot of credit. When I wrote my book, about apps, I like gave them credit in that there is like, they have a great sort of way to think about how do you create that blue ocean, but then tying it into the services specifically, a lot of their stuff was more about like big brands and so forth. So in any case, if we can get deeper into the reason why they're reaching out and why they ultimately buy, like one of the first things I do with my clients is we go through their own roster and portfolio of like, hey, talk about four or five different folks mm-hmm. that have bought from you. What were the reasons why they bought? Like, what did they ask you when they first reached out? A lot of people don't think about that, but that is a gold mine. Like that right there. If anyone takes anything away, like go look at why people bought from you. What was the first thing they asked you about? That's the language that you should be using in the positioning that I help solve those kinds of problems.
So I want to pause there, Ken, and make sure, because I think this is a very tactical nugget you just hit on, as opposed to going to your clients and saying, hey, why'd you buy from us? Right? Go back to those call recordings of your sales calls when you've identified, okay, these five clients could fit our premium lighthouse client. What were some of the first questions they asked? What were some of the first things that they said? And use that language, not what you're asking them over here in kind of this, you know.
Yeah, even in like, I don't want to interrupt you. I just got really excited. Because no, it's like you're making it really clear for people, but exactly that. Like even you can pay someone to go talk to your clients and do surveys and so forth, or like actually do interviews. And I'm not knocking those things, like it's a thing. But if you're using a CRM, like, you know, HubSpot that captures the form data or however, you know, again, chatbots, all these different things today, you have all the information there already. So mine that, use that, and then bring it back into how you're describing yourself in the market.
Yep.
That's going to, and then not just for everybody, but for that segment that you've identified that you say that, you know what, if I could have, like, I had a client yesterday I'm talking to, and they're like, oh, if I could just have three more of these clients. I'm like, okay, let's go do that. Like, let's not just talk about it. Like, let's go make that happen.
Yeah. It's kind of like I heard Andrew Huberman on a podcast the other day. He's like, I was just sitting here and like, you know, why am I not fit? Well, because I'm not exercising, right?
Right.
I want more of these clients. Well, what are you doing to get more of those clients specifically? There might be some steps. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy, right? But ask yourself, are you actually doing anything proactive to go find those premium lighthouse clients? Everybody write down premium lighthouse client and stick that to your desk and think about that until the end of the week. And I bet you'll come up with three, four, five things that you could do even before the end of the year to go after them. Speaking of going after them, number three on the list here is dominate the channel where they hang out the most. Sorry, Ken. Look like you had something.
This is so important too, because what I don't want people to do is, I'm not saying I don't like inbound. I love inbound. In fact, if you get to inbound, that's the best place to be. But if you don't have that client, and what you have, what I call the opposite of the lighthouse client, is the legacy client.
Yeah.
Which is that lagging indicator of leads coming to you. Then we need to identify, where did those folks come from? Or is there a way to build a presence? So for me, in the last year, moving out of what I was doing before, my agency was built during the days where you could basically have WordPress and SEO worked, right? Like back, you know, old agencies. Now today, that's not the case. So I was heavily reliant on SEO, and I didn't really differentiate and have another channel. But I want you to go to that channel that you see someone in. So I built a social presence, especially on LinkedIn. So feel free to follow me there. I talk about all this stuff pretty much every day. No, Logan knows, he's in the comments sometimes. And if your client's there, like, be present for them, be in front of them with this differentiated positioning, talking through the challenges that they're going through and showing them how you solve those things.
Yep, absolutely.
But the thing that I will just, like, slightly different than a lot of others, because someone else was like, oh, well, I've seen this before. The difference is that I also want you to have two other channels warming up. Mm. And this is a risk mitigation element. This is the operations part. And we're going to get into the over-servicing even deeper, but this is the risk mitigation part, is that have two warming up in the background, including one you own. So ideally, that could be something like building out a newsletter list, right? And capturing emails. It could even be, to some extent, although we're somewhat dependent on algorithms, SEO, right? It could be even like toggling a paid ad strategy. Now, do you own it? No, but you can control the spend level. But having another place so that if something changes, like algorithms change on those main channels, you still aren't just like, oops, I have no more leads. They dried up. That's why I actually get really concerned about referral. You can't scale that up and down, right? Yeah. Just with referrals only.
Yeah, absolutely. So number three, I want to keep going through here. We already had a question about number four in the portfolio of offers. Ray, thank you for your question. I think we'll touch on that here in a second. On number three, if you're not yet subscribed to Agency Life, the podcast version of this series, I just dropped the link there. Let's see, what's today? Wednesday. Tomorrow, Pete Caputa, CEO of Databox, and Carl Sakis, their episode is dropping. They surveyed over 200 agencies on where they're spending in their own marketing, what channels are working. working for them. So if this topic specifically, you're kind of leaning forward, but we don't have time to go deep on it today, subscribe to the show and the episode that is dropping tomorrow will be a great one. Let's talk about number four, because I think this really sets us up to get into the servicing part of it. Is this portfolio of offers. Ray Smith asked, should you package the portfolio of offers or a la carte, which is, I think, something you'd naturally touch on here, Ken, as you talk about why is a portfolio of offers important in standardizing yet centering your services around value? So I'll let you take it away again.
And I think this is, there's a nuance and a complexity to this that maybe we won't go in as deep today, but we'll see how far we can get with it. Because I do want to make sure that we're talking about kind of what happens next and seeing if we could solve some of those problems for people that are like, well, this is all great, but I'm drowning right now. So how do we solve that? So when it comes to offers, you know, a lot of people, I'm not the only person on the market that talks about offers, right? There's lots of people that talk about it. But I think the difference is that we've aligned our offers to this point because of the positioning, which ties into the Blue Ocean services, which ties into the Lighthouse client, which then ties into what I want to be scalable service offers, which allow us to get paid not just for that more of mentality. So this is where a lot of the other things out in the marketplace, and I'm not saying they're not decent ideas, right? There's all sorts of ideas out there, but it's very industry specific to agencies, right? To professional services versus just like, I'm building an offer to sell something in real life, right? Or some other thing that's not a professional service, which is more complex, longer buying cycles and bigger value. My deal started at six figures for my agencies, right? Now, not everyone does have that something that large. So what we're looking to do here, instead of saying, here's what my service is, or instead of just saying, here's what my offer is, which is a way to package up the service in a repeatable way, we're going to expand the surface area of getting a yes by showing them a portfolio of options. Mm-hmm. And what we can do in that is that there might be someone that's not okay just going straight into buying the high ticket, the high price thing. And a lot of agencies now say, I was at fault of this early on in my career of like, oh, cool, I want to get that next whale. Everyone talks about the whale. It's like, oh, cool, we got a whale. And those are the ones that are often sending the nastygrams and owning your life. Again, I would love to
see
that.
You're ringing the sales gong 1 week and then you're stressed pulling your hair out.
Exactly.
The very next week.
So I want you to have a portfolio of options where there is an option in there that would simply just introduce them to the value that your agency provides without having to get that next five-figure or six-figure deal or seven-figure deal. I even sold seven-figure deals. You know, those were those for service agencies like those, you know, you're getting into enterprise level at that point. So the offer portfolio can have an introductory offer that especially is focused more on the foundations, on the strategy, on the setup for everything else. Now, I don't like to say it's an audit or a roadmap necessarily because clients are like, oh, I don't want to pay for that. It's like too theoretical. Mm-hmm. But as an example, I would set up a foundational offer in the portfolio of offers for the agency that was focused on software that would be more about strategy UX design as a foundational item. Today, my clients, let's say you're in accounting, we're focusing on reviewing all the different data points, right? And we're kind of collecting all that data and starting to come up with some recommendations before we get into doing all the work. Mm-hmm. And that just allows people to cross a threshold where instead of getting a lot of no's, and I just talked about this week, you're not a good fit, drives me nuts. Please stop saying to people, other people, everyone's a human, you're not a good fit. We're showing them an option that could be a good fit, and then getting them into our roster, and then they can grow with you over time. Now, a lot of my clients start with me in a very basic option. I prove out the value to them, and then I don't have to upsell anyone because I'm just providing so much value. They're like, Ken, can we go work with you on this other level here? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of my clients are doing that same model. And yes, there still will be some people that jump straight into the higher ticket stuff if you do the Lighthouse client targeting.
Yeah.
But they don't have to, right? It actually reduces your risk, by the way. You know this, Logan, right? If you sold someone into a really high ticket thing, like everyone's on sort of red alert, like making sure that they're happy.
Yes.
I'll stop there for now. And you can tell me where else you want to go next.
It's really good. I think there are a few things I wanted to call out for folks is, you know, just because if you've done the work to go from no ICP to an ICP to identifying who are the premium Lighthouse clients, even within that, you could set yourself up for over-servicing in some ways that you might not think about. And it ties into like the psychographics we were talking about earlier.
Sure.
Maybe it's the type of organization, headcount, revenue, growth yeah. stage, industry, that you know how to help them and drive the outcomes. But they're the sort of folks that really like to experiment and do stuff on their own and do as much internally as possible. And if you yeah. try to sell them on a do it with me or done for you sort of yeah. service, whatever that service is, they're never going to quite be happy, at least even if you jump straight into that service, because they're always going to be like, how fast could we have done that ourselves, right?
Right.
But what I heard you say on another podcast or a webinar recently is, as you think about this portfolio of offers, it's not these disparate things. We do SEO over here and we do right. web design over here. It's this is the thing that we do that delivers these sorts of outcomes. But you can break it up and give people a few different ways to buy that. Show yeah. me how to do it. Do it with me. You know, do it for me. And maybe those aren't necessarily the three. And I think do it done for you is some danger zone sometimes. But is that fair to say, and kind of how people can think about breaking up these portfolio?
Yeah, yeah. Offers? Like exactly, Ben. And one thing that I, without again making it overly complex for an hour long conversation, is that the best situation that you can get into, again, I want your lighthouse client to feel like you're selling to a peer. Like you see Logan and I interacting like peers here, right? We've all been doing this stuff for a little bit. The idea though is that you can grow with your client over a longer period of time, a longer lifetime value versus, oh, cool, I signed them up for a 3-month retainer and they churned at the end of that 3-month retainer. And now I'm back to having the, you know, backfill that client. Yeah. Maybe you sold them into something too high and you got into over-servicing them. You got into, we got to do all the things, assign all the people. I'm taking this person off of this account, putting them over here because they're a better project manager or they're better with this industry or whatever it is. Again, that's why the benefit of having a similar kind of lighthouse client that wants a similar outcome or transformation or result lets us scale without over-servicing, without always having to hire that next person. Because we're doing similar things with similar sales process versus quick side note, but I know people can relate to this. So I was one of the three partners in our firm. And one of the partners, like every time a new lead comes in, it's like we build a new sales deck for that lead. Yeah. Lead. Oh, this person from this industry came in. Oh, the marketing team, just all of their roadmap just got killed because they want to go build a new deck for that lead and close that lead. And I'm like, guys, we can't just keep responding to all these different leads and keep building all these things. So that's all coming down once again to keeping a simple process. And it's why I've actually scaled to a larger revenue amount as a solopreneur. And it's not, this is not about a solopreneur thing, just saying like as an individual with the systems, the processing, and not over servicing than a lot of agencies that are like 5 to 10 people. Mm-hmm. And why a lot of my clients who do have 5 to 10 people are scaling more than companies that are 20 and 30 people, and why a lot of people today are now beating out traditional agencies that are built just only around big headcount. So now I'm on my soapbox. I'll get back off.
Hey there, it's Logan with teamwork.com. I wanted to take a quick timeout from this conversation to ask you just a few questions. Are you an agency leader looking at the year ahead with concerns about AI, inflation, employee turnover, and client retention all at the same time? Are you curious how your peers are managing similar concerns and thinking about the path forward? If so, I've got some good news for you. Teamwork.com recently partnered with Audience Audit to gather responses from over 500 agencies around the globe into a comprehensive research report, the State of Agency Operations 2023 edition. And to make it easy for you as a regular listener of Agency Life, we've linked to it right in the description of this episode. So if you want insights from fellow agency leaders about how they're managing profitability, employee utilization rates, the use of new AI tools, and over-servicing clients, check that link in the description of this episode and access the 2023 State of Agency Operations Report today. All right, let's get back to the rest of the conversation with today's guest.
My clients who do have 5 to 10 people are scaling more than companies that are 20 and 30 people, and why a lot of people today are now beating out traditional agencies that are built just only around big headcount. So now I'm on my soapbox. I'll get back off.
That's okay. You've, you know, taken your own stripes to be able to earn the right to step up on that soapbox from time to time. I love to see some good interaction in the chat about the portfolio of offers. Let us know if you have, you know, been consistently building new sales decks, if you've found yourself kind of feeding the beast, trying to slay the dragon, as Ken said earlier. One thing I wanted to note, coming back to our poll, how often does your agency over-service? Out of 101 responses that we got today, thank you for everybody who contributed. Literally none of you said rarely or almost never. 0% said that one. Good news was always or almost always was 19%. Most of the time was 50%. So at least we're in that second bracket. But you're not alone, and it does align with what we saw in the hundreds of agencies in the State of Agency Operations report as well. So then aligning your marketing efforts to how you deliver the work. If you come up with that portfolio of offers, now you can start talking about those in a similar way. Yeah. And I think that's really kind of where that leads into now aligning that with how you actually deliver the work. Let's see, there's some good stuff in the chat here. I just want to take a look for a second. Anything else you wanted to add there, Ken, before we get into optimizing service delivery?
Yeah, I think if you just go back for 1 second, and it's directly tied into this. So if you look at that last point, what happens when we don't build out offers? And by the way, I had a very systematized way to build custom offers effectively, but it's using the offer portfolio. And what I mean by that is that I'm okay if we build the sandbox of offer portfolio. If a client starts asking for a prospect in that case, you know, oh, well, I kind of like what I see in option one, but I want to also have some things in option two. That's okay if they're in the sandbox. Now, obviously, I'm not going to give them the lower cost to get all of option two. Right. But now we're having a discussion, right, about fitting within the sandbox of the options and the packages.
Yeah.
And that allows us to solve, you can go to the next slide, right, the over-servicing problem. Da-da-da. Because they're not set up
I need to get a stream deck where I can, you know, play those transitions.
Yeah, you could have a little sound effect, right?
Right.
Because now we're in the situation where their expectations are fully aligned of what fits within the sandbox of what we talk through versus getting into deliverable mode. And all of a sudden they're looking at a line item and saying, well, this thing wasn't done, right? And then we get the nasty gram. Or you said this person was going to, and obviously we never want to write someone's name onto an account, but you said this person was going to help with this and now they're no longer here. Or they didn't get assigned to our account. So why we spend the first half of this conversation on the marketing and sales is if you don't solve those two things, you will be stuck in the exact problems that we're trying to solve today.
Yep.
I want to get away from projects. I want to get away from deliverables. I want to talk about the thing that we want to do with them within the offer portfolio. Mm-hmm. And then that allows us to have a conversation of, and I even did this, by the way, this was progressive like 10 or 15 years ago, that we use a retainer model in software services. And right. we would show them an offer portfolio using our different service tiers and saying like, hey, the good faith estimate here, based on everything that we know, is going to be between 4 to 5 months to do this work. If you want it to be dialed in even more, then we can start with this introductory, you know, engagement where we're going to focus on the strategy, the UX, the wireframes, all the foundation pieces, and then we can even dial that in more. But if you just want to go fast and get into it, just know that it's not going to be precise. Now, does that take a little bit of positioning? Absolutely. Does it talk, you know, but it's also better to have that up front. I'd rather someone say no than sign up with me and then I have to be down to the exact dollar to deliver it on the backside. Because some of this work is complex, right? Like if you're doing something that's customized here on this call, you're doing design, you're doing development, you're even doing some, I have some folks that are just, you know, they're in marketing, but it's like very hyper-customized campaigns, right? Mm-hmm. You have to have that hard conversation up front to not have the nasty conversations later on. And that's really kind of the central focus here. We can get into, you know, some of the communication paradigms and so forth next.
Yeah, I definitely want to get to the flipping the communication pyramid here in just a second, because that's, again, I think this visualization is going to help a ton of people. But I just want to reiterate there, the power of having that portfolio of offers, one, avoids you having to say you're not a good fit. Right. If you're a podcast production agency, we produce the show, we help you grow the audience, da, da, da. Well, what if I just want help in the strategy to get started, in knowing what tools I should use, all of those things. Those are probably things, if that's your specialty, that you're doing anyway, right? And so building an offer that is kind of an entry point where that's all someone wants, and then they are kind of that do-it-yourselfer, then you can talk about those offers. And here's the pros and cons. Here are the types of clients that, you know, usually pick this one or this one. And you get into that, well, this includes this, but it doesn't quite, you know, include this, as opposed to, well, I thought that was included because right. You had one offer that, you know, the thing I hated with those nasty gram conversations is when I was on the client experience side at the agency was, well, I was told this was a turnkey solution. Turnkey solution means so many, like what that actually includes is, you know, very subjective and can be tough to get on the same page. So having that portfolio of offers forces you to get clearer and forces you to provide more clarity to the client during the sales process.
Yeah, all right. Totally, man.
I know you are big on after we sign that deal, even if, you know, we have done the work to reposition ourselves, to go after those lighthouse clients, to develop the portfolio of offers, there are some pitfalls where we're just stepping right into it, especially with new clients. And it really does have to do with the way that we work with clients.
Yeah.
Talk us through some of this. I've been really excited to share that.
Man. And the thing that's important about this, so this is why I talk about having a very disciplined approach to positioning, to marketing, to sales, to how we close the client. Like I practice with my clients how we even close the deals, how we talk through the way that we deliver the work, right? So when we come into the delivery of the work, often we're just allowing our clients to dictate that entire process.
Yep.
So, and by the way, some people hear this today and they're like, oh, well, yeah, Ken, I just like you, I have these Fortune 500 or Fortune 100 or global brands, and they're just going to tell me what I have to do because I want to get those accounts. Mm-hmm. Well, I had those conversations. Like I bellied up to the CIO of some of these companies or to the decision maker and said, look, you're hiring us not just to come in and do the widgets. You're hiring us to get these results. And I'm going to go to bat for my team that this is the best way that we work. We have a system that works. That's why we've been able to get these results. That's why you have come to us and you said, we want to hire you. If we didn't take the time to think through the way to repeat that process, and by the way, this is so key, Logan, that the offer that you sell directly ties into the delivery system. So if it's a higher ticket, like high value, you know, engagement, then yeah, they're going to be immersed in the tools with us. We're going to be using async based tools like your, you know, I know you want to be on this diagram, so we'll get
you
there.
Yeah, we need to get teamwork.com.
I know, we really should have updated it at least for that, right? Just call this out now. But, and I love the tool and you've made a lot of updates on it through the years as well. So this is like a couple of years old at this point. But the point being that when we talk about an async based way, you like the call out there, right? If we have an async based way to communicate, then we are getting paid for the way that we decide to do the work versus being in front of the client and having daily standups and having, you know, daily touch points and being in Slack and being in all these places. And by the way, this is very dangerous, even from a risk standpoint. Not that I want people to be scared, but if you're in your tools with that client may be DMing a project lead or an engagement manager, and you have no visibility into what's happening, especially if you're the owner or you're a VP or you're some person. You're like, you have no idea what's happening on that account. Because now the client's pinging those people in all their tools. So part of the process that we do is through the sales process itself. We didn't talk about this because it was kind of more talking about the offers. But in the sales process, we actually have the conversation around, here's how we will engage with you. And it's a selling point.
Yep.
We're not going to be in 27 different tools. I joke around that it's like, we're not going to be in all the tools plus carrier pigeons and smoke signals, right? Like you can't show up on my doorstep and communicate and work with us. So we're going to have a disciplined way to do that. You're going to have a single point of contact. So if you're the stakeholder, Lighthouse client, and you're not involved day to day, at any point you want to drop into our tool, you can see exactly what's happening. You don't have to get an update from anyone on your team. And I know, you know, your tool has a bunch of, you know, great reporting. And all, so we're going to have the dashboards, whatever you want to see at the executive level, boom, just go there.
Yep.
But we're not going to have is like this constant real-time communication. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and that's really what we see on the left here in this visualization for everybody is how we typically work, right? It is the bulk majority of what we do with the client is on Teams and Slack and Zoom, and it's real-time communication because they're like, they sign up, hey, can we add you to our Slack? Can we do a Slack connect? That's one of the like, raise your hand if you have gotten that question of, can we add you to Slack from a new client this week, right? It's probably a ton of us. And then they're like, well, we like to use this project management platform, or we work with agencies this way. And now you have to be like, well, maybe we could, and you're faced with a difficult decision or a difficult conversation. And then you're kind of backing it up with the tools at the top there, Google Docs and Notion and the right. things that might contain your SOPs versus flipping that, explaining how you work and what tools you're going to work in during the sales process. And I like what Ken said there is not a, well, if you want to work with us, you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to buckle up and do it our way. It's no, we've honed our system. It includes these tools. Hopefully one of those is teamwork.com. we use these tools and it allows us to deliver these sorts of results. Because again, we're not delivering these deliverables. We're producing results and we're going to show you the outline of what is the scope? How are we going to work? And then we're going to manage that in a platform that's built for managing client work where you can right. see that. You have one point of contact. And then obviously we're going to have Zoom. We're going to have that real-time interaction for QBRs or account reviews, kickoff calls, those sorts of things. But you kind of set the stage differently because I've been there. It's a very tough conversation if you haven't headed it off at the pass early to say when a client's like, well, we want to work with you this way. Oh, they've already yeah. signed. What are we going to do? Right.
Yeah. So I want to talk about this, like very precisely tie it back to full circle. And I know we're doing some Q&A, but over servicing. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's step through this. We don't have a lighthouse client. We have five different kinds of clients, including legacy clients who drain us. They're a pain. You're like, oh man, here comes this next client call. Like some people are right now, like in 10 minutes, I got to talk to this client that I don't want to talk to. Right. So we have all these different kinds of clients. Now we're selling all different sorts of projects, custom proposals. You know, we're meeting the needs, especially for these clients that are asking things of us just to sign them up. And especially if we're like, oh, you know what? This last quarter was bad. So I'm just going to sign this one on. Mm-hmm. So now we have a bunch of different kinds of clients doing a bunch of different kinds of work in 127 different kinds of tools. That is,
and each client's in a different industry, and we right. have to relearn. Like
that is over servicing right there alone, right? And so, if especially the bigger the client, the more they're paying you, the more you're willing to like just do whatever they say. And I would do this as much as for your scalability, as for your sanity, and for your team. As I said before, if my team started feeling like they were just employees of our clients, they would want to keep working for me. And I literally had to fire some of the big brands I mentioned. Or get, you know, transition them out or put it to them like, look, we're no longer going to just work in all of your tools. My team doesn't want to go to your standups. They know how to get things done. We don't need babysitters here. We're your agency of record for this work. Here's how we can continue to work together. Or we're going to have to find a way to transition out of this because we're in that state of over-servicing at that point. So that's really the tie back through why we talk through the three systems and how this is a key part of ensuring that we have a scalable delivery system. Because if we don't have to be in front of the client and we can get paid, that's going to unlock the creativity of our team versus always being, you know, available for FaceTime.
Yeah, available for FaceTime. I think a lot of folks can relate to that. That is the value in your client's mind. It's tied to how available you are for FaceTime. Right. And that's because you haven't structured the delivery in a way that sets them up to expect anything else or to see value in a different way. So let's talk briefly, Ken, about some of the ways that agencies can standardize the delivery system without making the work too cookie cutter, right? Because yeah, we want totally. That's a tension I've felt. And I think some folks might be thinking, okay, we're talking about, you know, the are all about the value and not the widgets, but I need to standardize, but then does that lower the value? For anybody who's kind of feeling that question, sure. I'll speak to the elephant in the room there.
Yeah. And I think this is the big thing. And I used to say this to my prospects all the time. So I'm glad you asked that question. My prospects as the agency owner, you know, not as the role today.
Okay.
But the more process and systems we have on the basic one-on-one things, the more creative we could be for you in the unique parts of your business. So we're not thinking about when a new project starts, like all the basic fundamentals, like which tool are we using? What's the kickoff going to look like? What happens in 90 days within the project? How are we going to run the roadmap? We're not thinking about all those basics. We instead can start to think about, for this particular client, yes, they're going to use some of our basic fundamentals, but now we can get into the differentiator for them, because we're not reinventing the way that we do this project yet again. We're not in having to build out SOPs for 12 different tools because we're willing to get bullied around by our client because they are the one paying us the bills. Remember, we're bringing value and expertise too, right? I know people here have fired clients before. Mm-hmm. And so it's not about just doing, when I say creating a conveyor belt of clients, it's not to take out the creativity. Mm-hmm. It's to allow us to focus on building that best thing as opposed to all the tooling around it, the sales process around it, the positioning around it. Those things should be more systematized to get us to the part that we love. I was writing about this today when I got to a certain scale. You can become a people manager of clients and those you hire versus being the expert. I want you to be the expert in your business and the thing that you love, not just being the business owner that only becomes caring about all those other elements that are could really be systematized at the end of the day.
Yeah. When I was a part of an agency, our COO would often say that creativity is overrated. And he said that to get a rise out of our creative director. What he actually meant was we're using creativity where we're wasting the creative time, energy, and those exactly. sorts of things. Yep. What tool are we using with this client? How are we doing the kickoff call? If you add systems, process, repeatability to those things in structuring your tech stack the way you're talking about there, Ken, in that last slide, then that opens up more time, brain space, and capacity for using creativity where it is valuable, because that's what he actually meant. We're going to get to a few questions here in a second. Would love, we've still got tons of people here on. Let us know what was your biggest takeaway in the chat. What was something that Ken or I touched on? Probably more nuggets from Ken today than me, honestly.
Come on, man. You got some good ones in there.
Let us know what's in here. The communication pyramid, the portfolio of offers, the lighthouse client. What stood out to you? All right. Ray Smith asked a question here, Ken. Should you package the portfolio of offers or offer them a la carte? I'm sure you've consulted with folks that have done both, blended, either or. What are your thoughts on this going back to the portfolio of offer concept?
Usually it's packaged, frankly. And the idea is that if there's a certain kind of service that you don't do as frequently, I kind of keep that like off menu, so to speak. Just like you can go into Starbucks and say like you want a certain thing. You know, everyone's like, oh, the secret Starbucks menu. So I was just working with a client the other day on this, and it's like, look, this other part of the business has really great margins, but we don't have a marketing funnel to get more of those kinds of clients in. Just make that part of the sales conversation and mention it as an add-on, but don't lead with that through the offerings, because it's not, again, it's going to take us away from keeping things easy to deliver versus that over-servicing stuff that we're trying to avoid.
Yep. I love it. All right. We've got another question here. I may mispronounce our attendee's name, so I'll just share the question. When it comes to legacy clients who are used to being over-serviced due to their size at the start of the partnership, something we touched on here, how can we realign their expectations as the agency grows?
This is a perfect time of year to do it, first of all. Now, not everyone kind of has like a yearly retainer cycle or, you know, depending on the client, but this is a perfect time. Like, hey, we're getting into the next year. And Miss Legacy Client, Mr. Legacy Client, here's what we're doing going into 2024. We have adjusted our rates. Like, you've been on this rate for 2 to 3 years or whatever amount of time it's been. We actually don't even offer that rate anymore. Going into 2024, here's what we actually are going to be doing for all of our other clients. We're willing to move you in the next 30 days to sort of a rate that you can keep for a short period of time. But thereafter, you're going to have to upgrade into one of these other ones. And essentially what we are going to do, the simple answer to the question is that we're going to downsell them. I'm okay, by the way, just firing them altogether, right? Like just, especially if there's someone who is what I just called, like they're draining you, you hate that client and you just kept them around. But for a lot of other clients, like I had fractional offerings that were very, very juicy, but I want to keep doing some of that work for certain types of clients. So I downsold them into something that was less money. They obviously got less things out of it, right? We focused on a different part of the business, but allowed me to continue to keep that revenue stream and not have to, you know, over service or over deliver myself. So I obviously practice what I preach there. So it's a great situation to be able to downsell them into a lower offer.
Okay. That's interesting. I think that's super tactical for folks. We've got a few more questions coming in. We might go a little bit past the top of the hour. We still got tons of people and a few questions going in here. So I want to make sure we get them answered for you guys. Next one from an anonymous attendee, Ken, what's the best way to communicate a switch in that communication period? We're having issues with processes taking up time and creativity, as we said, and they want to set up processes to educate and guide the client into a better 2024. So making that switch and inverting that pyramid.
This is where I love to exercise my like software brain. Again, I built all these applications and the complex systems. And if you ever think about, you know, building out a new feature or building out an app, we kind of bring in some ideas to how I now roll out operations and systems for my clients. So the first thing that I would want this person to do is build out these systems and introduce it to a new client first.
Okay.
So the next client you bring on, I want you to effectively beta test the new systems and process. And then do that once, twice, three times. When it's working well with the new clients, you can selectively pick a handful of your existing clients, assuming they're not legacy clients, by the way, right? But take a handful of your next set of existing clients and begin to roll out that system and process to those clients. It may not be the most problematic one, by the way, right? Like we don't want to start with the hardest one.
Choose carefully.
Right. Choose carefully, but you want to maybe find one that you like, right? And that you have a good relationship with, because it's easier to have that conversation. Then eventually when that's working well, we roll it out to the rest of the client base. And then we're essentially on the same system across the agency.
Okay. That's a really good one.
Sorry, I have no idea. I have no opinions on that, Logan, whatsoever. Sorry. Just have zero thoughts on that.
It's tough to get you, telling us how you really feel, Ken. All right. Another question from Sam Morgan. Sam, thanks for all the interaction today. Ken, do you have any suggestions for projects that run over the fixed budget, but are not yet delivered? Let's see. And want to approach the client for more budget. Do you agree with this or feel like the responsibility is on the agency? Never had this experience before, right,
Ken? Yeah, right. Oh man, this is the worst part of over-servicing. And the answer is, and I, as the person who like owned the budget and ultimately owned, you know, the company, I was a sole owner initially before I merged in with the other guys. I really kind of take this on like a case by case basis. Mm-hmm. And so this is a more subjective answer. If I feel like we didn't do our job and like we just messed up, like I will foot the bill. Mm-hmm. If I felt like we did a bad job scoping it, or my team didn't deliver, or I was not engaged enough, which didn't really happen. Obviously, again, we want to prevent this situation, but I would look at it and say, like, we are going to take ownership of that and we're going to make it right. If you feel like you've done right yourself and you really feel like it's the client pushing back, you have to have that hard conversation and say, look, like, you have to have all of your ducks in a row, right? You're like, here's what we sold. Here's what we've been doing to rectify the situation. Here's what the go forward plan is. And if you want us to get this done, it's going to cost XYZ more to do so. And if you don't, we're at an impasse. Now, there could be a situation where like, well, we're owed money. Well, that's a bad situation to be in itself, right? Now you're even in a worse situation. It's like, you're like, I need them to pay for this. So there's going to, you know, there's not like a clear cut answer here. It's going to take more of the art than the science side of it all. But I definitely take ownership when I feel like we've messed up or we haven't done our job.
Yeah, I mean, to your credit though, Ken, you gave us a question to kind of bifurcate the two. I love when I can sneak bifurcate into a conversation. So thank you for that. What is that question? Like, where is really the onus? And then how do you handle that conversation? Now, even if it is on the client, if you don't have the receipts, if you aren't managing your client work in a platform like teamwork.com or something else where you can say, look, here's the work that was done. Here's when we asked for this feedback. Here's when we didn't do it. If it's trapped over there in DMs in Slack,
exactly.
What are you going to do? Right. Then it's like, I feel like it's not on us, but I don't know. And I definitely can't approach the client and say, I know this wasn't on us. So it makes it tougher. So again, it backs up a couple of
beautiful points. Okay. We're giving you more credit. You said that Ken dropped all the nuggets. That's a really important point. Like, no, tying it back into that. That's really critical.
Yeah. Awesome. We've got lots of questions coming in. If we don't get to yours live, we will save these and maybe try and follow up with folks individually with some of these questions. Oh, I think we've got time for one or two more. Are you okay with that, Ken?
Let's do it.
All right, man. Another anonymous question. How do you approach conversations for retainer increases in line with inflation? Okay. Oh boy, is this a hot button today?
Yeah, I feel like this one's easier. You know, the harder conversation to me is just like general rate adjustments. So we're doing well as the agency. We're targeting a more premium Lighthouse client and we're going to raise our rates. I've had some clients raise their rates 30%, still get no one blinking, 50%, still no one's blinking. And like, we have to keep pushing it. Like those are obviously they're doing a great job. Maybe they're arguably over-servicing, right? Or over-delivering. But I feel like the macroeconomic conditions are the easier conversations to have, which is like, look, here's what's happening in the macro environment. We have to make updates accordingly. And I will tell you this, that there's like two sides of this coin. So I just sidebar, right? Like really big picture stuff right now. Agencies and contractors are doing better now. Like I have the data points. I have hundreds of clients. Some of them obviously are in my lower offerings, right? And they're kind of part of my group coaching and so forth. And then some of them are more premium, but I have a lot of data points. Like the market's going well for agencies and for consultants and solopreneurs because all that work is being pushed outside. All the layoffs are like, we need someone to do that work, but we don't want to keep that as a fixed cost.
It's a really good call out. It is not all doom and gloom as we look ahead to 2024.
Like for us in this kind of contracting agency world, there's actually a lot of growth opportunities right now. And I grew my multi seven figure agency. And then eventually, like I said, I went with those bigger guys, but like during the Great Recession, effectively, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. there's opportunity for people that are smart and adaptive and nimble.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's an easier thing overall, you know, just like, but you have to be ready to have it as a talking point. And if you're having like a year-end review or you're having a contract renewal, like you have to make sure that everyone in the company who's talking to your clients has the way to describe this cleanly and what's going to happen. If you don't have a communication plan, you're not in ahead of it, you're reactive, then that's when the problems happen.
Yep, absolutely. It fits with the entire theme of today. Well, I think there we'll wrap it up for everyone who's still on live. Appreciate you hanging out. If you want to download the State of Agency Operations Report, go to teamwork.com/agencylife. It's right there in the header. You can get a copy of this very meaty report to look at benchmarking yourself in some of these key areas around servicing, utilization rate, client loss, and churn against many of your peers. Hundreds and hundreds of agencies contributed to this. Thank you if you were one of the survey respondents. We are moving up our next webinar since we've got the holidays towards the end of December, obviously. And as we were talking about here today, I think we mentioned HubSpot. We mentioned, hey, if you've got your tool on the sales and marketing side, and then you've got a tool like teamwork.com on the client delivery side, how can you get those synced together to optimize all the way through from marketing, sales, and delivery? We recently launched a brand new integration between teamwork.com and HubSpot. So especially if you're an agency that's part of HubSpot Solution Partner Network, we have three elite successful agencies that are going to be sharing specific use cases, how you can leverage this integration with HubSpot for better client delivery within your agency and maybe some solutions that you can even bring to your clients. So if you want to take a picture of the QR code here, you can register for that one coming up here in just a couple of weeks. And then I will drop the link right there in the chat for everybody that's still on. If you want to grab that, you will get more info about that. But I know a ton of people have been really excited about this and what it can do, this new integration with HubSpot, what it can do for your agency and for your clients. With that, I want to thank everybody who attended. If you're watching on demand, hopefully you got value out of this session. Ken, thank you so much for dropping such fire today on us today with all of your content. For folks who aren't yet connected with you, don't know where to find some of your content, what are some of the best ways to follow up and engage with you, my friend?
Yeah, I'm very active on social networks. So my name is a little bit of a mouthful, but it's just like LinkedIn is, I'm super active there /Ken Yarmish. And then I do have a lot of the things I go through today. I have in a free blueprint. You can go to trs.club/blueprint and grab that there. And it goes deeper into some of the concepts and the strategy. So Logan, good times as expected. Great job. And thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, everybody. We'll include that link that Ken just mentioned in the follow-up email here as well, so you can find out more ways to get plugged in. Thank you for the great questions. Hopefully, we'll see many of you in just a couple of weeks in our next webinar here on the Agency Life series. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your week. See everybody. You've been listening to Agency Life. And if you made it this far, you're probably enjoying the show. If so, you can help other agency leaders find the show in about 14 more seconds. If you're listening in Apple Podcasts, you can simply scroll down till you see ratings and reviews and tap the number of stars you think the show deserves. We'll really appreciate it, and so will the other agency leaders who find the show based on your rating. And if you're looking for even more content to support your agency life journey, check out teamwork.com/agency life. There you can search through past episodes, get access to the Agency Life newsletter, and find additional video content to support and inspire you as you continue on this crazy roller coaster ride that is agency life.